Oral history as a research tool or a scholarly pursuit, it's relatively new, isn't it?
Obviously, people have relied on the spoken word to recount history since the days of the Greek historians Herodotus. But it's in the 1930s that you had scholars at historically black institutions beginning to actually formally record the memories of former slaves. And a lot of people kind of view the advent of oral history as a field with that, and then the Federal Writers Project chronicling the lives of ordinary Americans during the Great Depression. It's really only in 1948 that the Columbia Oral History Research Office was formed, and in part in conjunction with the advent of magnetic tape, of reel-to-reel tape, which made it possible to actually record the voices of people. And that's widely seen as the longest continuous oral history program in the country.
And that's a key difference when you think about history, when the layman thinks about studying history. Oral history reaches out to everyday people, if I can use that phrase, as opposed to just recounting the political changes wrought by kings or presidents.
Right. I think especially you see the growth of the movement really in the 1960s, not surprisingly, where you had both the advent of the cassette recorder, which made it much more accessible to record people, and you had kind of the social movements of the 60s as well as cultural developments that moved us away from thinking only about obvious movers and shakers to include sort of a wide range of people whose life stories could be recorded. So oral history, I would say, is democratic in that way. It's democratic in that it is accessible, that you don't have to be in a university to kind of conduct this sort of research. And it's democratic in a third way, in that it's sort of a face-to-face encounter of two people who together are making the final product.
The Oral History Association has been around for 40 years or more.
Almost 50 years.
It's
the national professional organization. And our mission really is to kind of not only have people in dialogue with themselves, but to elevate the practice of oral history, to have people realize that doing an interview, even though it's very easy today, especially with the technology that we have, isn't just tell us about the old days, Grandpa, but involves some forethought, involves some preparation, involves the development of empathy and rapport during an interview, involves some consideration of how the interview might be used, how it might be accessible, and so forth.
Does the association establish standards for research and documentation?
Right. The Oral History Association has best practices, which are on the website oralhistory.org. Yes, we have best standards, best practices, ethical responsibilities, best technical kind of considerations that we can kind of make, how to kind of store and preserve your interviews.
So according to the association, an oral history interview would be different than, say, what we're doing now.
Well, yes. I mean, we're talking about the past, first of all. We're talking about somebody providing information about the past about which he or she had firsthand knowledge as well. So it's not hearsay. It's not, you know, this story was passed. It's really, this is my experience. These are my recollections about the past.
How'd you get involved in oral history?
Well, I've been involved with this since I was an undergraduate in college in the early 1970s. I'm very much a product of those times. So I was interested in putting people into the historic record who historically had not been included in, quote, history. I was interested in the democratic nature of oral history. I was also very much aware that certain people create more documents than others, and so you learn a lot. I mean, I have done interviews with a wide range of people from, you know, Supreme Court justices, but also coal miners and textile workers and maids, and a lot of the stuff that I've learned over the years has not really been in history books. So it's really important to me to kind of contribute to the historical record by including people who often have not been in that record.
And what about preservation and archiving recordings, the tapes and analog methodology of the past, you know, has a relatively short shelf life. So is the future in the cloud?
The future probably is in the cloud, yes. You know, nobody really uses cassette recorders or reel-to-reel recorders anymore. That is an issue because there's a lot of really good stuff out there that should be in an archive. And are we going to be able to keep the formats, the technology to play this thing? So we will be involved in a great amount of digitization. And It's interesting. The digital revolution has, among other things, brought back sound into the equation, the actual sound itself. Oftentimes, you know, it was the transcript that was the primary document, but increasingly people are realizing the transcript is only a pale imitation of the actual spoken word. And we do have the possibilities now to kind of put oral histories online or in museum formats or in guided tours or in all of these other kinds of digital environments and platforms.
So what does the Oral History Association's relocation to Georgia State mean for the university?
Well, I think it does a couple of things. It signifies that Georgia State itself felt that oral history was core to the university's mission, that lo and behold, we realized that there were practitioners of oral history across disciplines and schools and colleges, that there are people in the College of Ed, there are people in the Andrew Young School of Public Policy, people even in the business school and the law school who are actually in the music school who are doing oral history. So it's promoting sort of cross-fertilization, and we've set up a GSU oral history roundtable every month now to talk about work that's being done on campus. We will become kind of the epicenter of the American oral history universe, you know, and I'm sure there will be people passing through and speaking on campus and so forth.
Does that mean more additions to the curriculum as far as methodology courses you could take?
Not necessarily. We do offer an oral history seminar, which I do teach every year and will continue to teach at the university. Not so much a curriculum, but again, this kind of awareness across disciplines. We have people in religion department who are doing oral history interviews about people's faith experiences. They're taking part in this roundtable. Our special collections in the library has done all sorts of oral history interviews over the years, and more attention will be drawn to their collections, I think.
And the OHA is not just an American organization. It's international, isn't it?
Yeah, we have a strong international presence at our annual meetings. We have scholarships for international participants to come to the annual meetings. There is an International Oral History Association, but the American Association certainly has a strong international presence, and we hope that some of those folks might come through Atlanta as well.
And if people want more information, best way to get it?
oralhistory.org. The telephone number of the Oral History Association office at Georgia State University is 404-413-5751, or you could email at oha@gsu.edu, oha@gsu.edu.
Cliff Kuhn is the new executive director of the Oral History Association, now housed at Georgia State University. Dr. Kuhn, congratulations and thanks.
Well, thank you, Steve.